Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. We're going to be speaking at about 11:30, we anticipate, with Patrice Bonimutwa, who is a lawyer in Europe. And we're going to be talking about this case of Stanislas Bonimpeka, a really startling situation. Mr. Bonimpeka is quite a well-known political figure from Rwanda. He has not been in that country for many years. And out of the blue, after many years living in Belgium, I believe, we will find out all the details, Belgian authorities have arrested him and are charging him. And it's what Taylor Report calls the April syndrome. Every April, they find it necessary to show their solidarity, these Western governments, with the current government in Rwanda, Paul Kagame's government, by accusing a Rwandan, always a Hutu, of crimes from the year 1994. Ugly business, actually. And it should be a scandal, actually, that this is going on. But instead of being a scandal, it's a ritual. So we'll be speaking to Patrice at 11:30. And again, it is the Taylor Report, CIUT at 9.5 FM. Let's talk a little bit about the what's developing with the Islamic Republic and the attack that took place on Israel. And I think we have to quarrel with the way it's being reported here, because it's so there's a syndrome that the Western media practice. The New York Times is the example of it. Their headline today says that Iran strike on Israel opens a dangerous new chapter in in the Middle East. Well, they didn't write a headline that Israel's attack on the Iranian embassy sometime previous, shortly previous, I don't know what the time was, maybe 10 days, opened a dangerous situation. And if you don't get the sequence right, you get the story wrong. And so they work at getting it wrong. Let's bring in the issue, for example, of Mexico right now. Mexico has an embassy in Ecuador. A well-known Ecuadorian politician who was under threat of his life went to the Mexican embassy, and the Ecuadorian army, he went there for asylum, an Ecuadorian army broke in to that embassy and removed him violently. And embassies, once the country accepts that an embassy can exist, they do it with the understanding it's a legal and a treaty issue. That is sovereign territory of that country. So actually, those Ecuadorian soldiers were entering Mexican territory, using violence to get in, violence to remove an individual who is in legally in Mexico. Now, you see, that's a diplomatic issue. If the government of Ecuador was unhappy with the government of Mexico for accepting this individual, then that is an issue of diplomacy. And, of course, recognition of how you sort matters out. Mexico has now gone to the International Court of Justice, and I believe they're going to take it. I know they've taken it up at the United Nations. And they're calling for the removal of Ecuador from the United Nations. That's how serious this business of embassies is. Now, that was their reaction. And incidentally, they get no support here. The Canadian, the U.S. governments, to my knowledge, have not expressed any opinion about what was done there by the Ecuadorians. I use the analogy because in the case of the Iranian consul in Syria, it was an attack using missiles, and it led to the deaths of Iranian citizens. They were on Iranian soil. So there's a big thing about attacking Iran and attacking Israel. Sure, that's an attack on soil, but so was the attack by the Israelis on the Iranian embassy, leading to the deaths of those individuals. So the New York Times is writing the story upside down. They did not get the sequence right. Instead, they put it upon Iran. Now, another issue here that really we need to recognize, and it is being written about, by the way, by people like the professor of California, calls himself on Twitter the Angry Arab. He's quite a brilliant man, a PhD, and teaches and all that, long history. He's been known and has been recognized by good journalists as being one of the people who will give you the most rational and careful analysis of events. And so he has pointed out that the phrase right to self-defense, Israel has the right to self-defense, and Israel stands alone, and Israel is capable of this and that. He says, well, if you have noticed, they are claiming that they were very successful in thwarting missile and drone attacks. Most of the thwarting was done by the United States, France, and the UK. The UK, remember, has a military base in Cyprus, and they immediately took to the air. And incidentally, the Islamic Republic did not hide what they intended to do. They said, our embassy, our sovereign territory was attacked, and we are going to respond because we have a right under Article 51 of the UN Charter. If your territory is attacked, that was their territory. Not only was it their territory, they were in a third country, that is Syria. Perhaps the Israelis got confused, and because they're so used to attacking Syria without anybody complaining, they attack Syria regularly. They attack Lebanon regularly. They fly over Lebanon all the time, every day. And, of course, they have attacked residential areas of Damascus. They've killed thousands of people, actually, in their assaults. So that has always been dismissed. But in this case, it was Iranian territory, and there were Iranian individuals there, military people, they're described as, and somehow or another that, and for the New York Times or the Toronto Star, that's supposed to be a big deal. Well, that's where you'd expect a representative of the Islamic Republic to be. Syria has exercised its right to call upon friends and allies and associates to come and help defend against ISIS, Al-Qaeda. It goes by many names. Home base is Maryland. They have been under this attack by terrorists, and they have asked both Russia and the Islamic Republic to assist them, which is their right. You notice no one remarks on this, but Israel says, oh, well, we're defending ourselves. Yes, the United States Air Force. All U.S. intelligence and military systems were employed, UK, France, wonderfully coordinated. They did it. And if you want to know who is really powerful, what that shows, the integration of the systems shows that Israel is a part and parcel of Western colonialism, or if you like, a fashionable term, neo-imperialism. They're the tip of the sword. But when they get into an altercation, in this case with the Islamic Republic, they call on them. They call on them. The U.S. and U.K. are immediately engaged. It's not a discussion. Oh, you're going to have a problem. Maybe we should help. There's no. It's already integrated. They're all together. Sometimes we mention on the show there's an intelligence operation called Five Eyes, which is entirely made up of Anglo-Saxon Protestant Christian states, English-speaking. Did I say that? English-speaking. An honorary member of the group, the only state that sometimes attends the meetings of Five Eyes, is Israel. So when Iran said, okay, we're going to do something, and they say that 10 days before, the U.S. is, first of all, takes the message, and then they prepare, and then we go through the theater of violence, in which it's a measured, what they call a measured hit. And you'd have to, I guess we'll have to find political scientists who can tell us, if you destroy an embassy, or pardon me, a consulate, and you kill leading individuals of a country on their own soil, what is proportional in response? They decided on what they carried out. One other detail about the reporting is that Iran says that they hit a Israeli airbase. I can't tell you the name offhand. They hit an Israeli airbase, and that was the base from which the planes or the missiles were launched that killed the Iranians in their embassy in Syria. So we need somebody who's interested in journalism, somebody, for example, maybe the Toronto Star or the Globe, if they are remotely interested, to go and see if that's true. Instead, what we're getting is reporting on how many missiles were in the air, how many we got shot down, how many got through. Oh, and then, of course, the little girl story. They say there's one victim, and, of course, it's an Arab girl. So they say, oh, look at that. The Muslim state of Iran fires all these missiles, and all they kill is one Muslim girl. I mean, that is classic old-school propaganda of the worst, the most embarrassing kind. But they always go for the worst. They don't seem to have any sophistication at all. I give you an example from the Civil War when the Union was defeating, finally going on the offensive against the major centers of the slave states of the Confederacy. They began to lay siege to the city of Atlanta. So they to show that they were on the outskirts of Atlanta, they fired artillery into the city. And immediately the Confederates announced that no harm was done, but one black freedman had been killed. It's absolutely classic. It's to say, oh, you people are against racism, you're against slavery. Look at this. You have killed a black person. That would be the slave owners announced that. So we do need somebody who cares about journalism to go and ask the question, is it true that the Iranians actually did hit the military base from which Israel had launched its rockets against Iranian territory? That's what we need to know. I don't know that we'll get an answer to that. I would say this, if we do, it's going to be from Democracy Now, who's doing such a great job here now of covering this whole matter. They had Gideon Levy on earlier today, and I really congratulate him on bringing forth voices that are not heard or seen in mainstream media. You do understand, I suppose, that the people who know about regions and like Asia or the West Asia, Palestine, etc., there are many who could really handle the topic, and mainstream media actually has them on the list of banned people. They simply aren't asked, except by, I would say, Democracy Now. And if the Taylor Report could get to Mr. Levy, I think we'd be glad to talk to him. It isn't done that way. Journalism has really, frankly, it has deteriorated dramatically. And I want to use a personal example of this. I want to mention an old friend of mine, Bill Cunningham, who produced the news at CBC. He established a global network. He ran W5 at CTV, I guess it was. As a friend, I hardly kept track of where he was working. But what I remember and I want to share is that he was an honest to God war correspondent, a real one. And people think at this point in history that we've all been talking about know what happened in the Vietnam War. And it's, in fact, we have lost track of how that war turned into a disaster for the United States. And the one thing they thought they had learned, or think they have learned, is that they now control journalists. They now say that if you're going to be a journalist covering an American war, this is what the Pentagon learned, their big lesson, their big takeaway from Vietnam is don't let any reporters near the war. When I say reporters, I mean real ones. Because what they say is, no, we're concerned for their safety. So we're going to embed them. We're going to put helmets on them. And we're going to put them next to a couple of guys with stars on their shoulder, or a captain or two. And then let them become integrated with our patriotic military forces, and then report everything that they're told by these military people, embedded. And it's poison. And unfortunately, journalists went from journalists to becoming propagandists. I want to tell you, Bill Cunningham was the real deal. He and Morley Safer, I can't remember all the other names, they were functioning as journalists. They would go, as in Bill's case, he was covering the Vietnam War. He also covered Nicaragua. He was a daring young man, as they say, and he went in to places where, to him, his safety, and I'm telling you based on many years of talking with him, his safety was based on the fact that he was what he said he was, and he wasn't some colonel spokesman. He wasn't enamored of big shots. As a matter of fact, if he had a great quality, he didn't like big shots. He wanted to get the story. And he wanted to be able to walk up to or make his way to any combatant and say, just tell me who you are, what you're doing, what this is about, etc. And his safety was in his integrity. And by the way, this was supposedly sworn to by their producer, directors, and every other eminent person at the studio. This guy is a reporter. He's not a spy. Now we live in a time when, frankly, the Pentagon changed the way journalism is done. And anybody in conflict with U.S. or Western forces has to assume that the journalist is actually working with and for the other side, which is one of the reasons, going back, Bill Cunningham was, he would say to fellow journalists, if he was in a group and he heard something peculiar, it didn't add up, he would say to that journalist, "Are you a spook?" Meaning, are you working with somebody else besides the company that you say you're from? And he had his suspicions because, and he explained to me once and to a couple of other people I remember, he was telling a story that he met a guy who was a journalist, and they were talking about, they were working on the same story. And he said to him, I heard you say you were in the military. And the guy said, yes. And he said, aren't you still in the military? And the guy said, yes. And then Cunningham said, you're the kind of guy who gets us all killed. If you're a journalist, you're a journalist. If you're in the military, you're in the military. Now that's, I wish I could say that was true of other journalists. By the way, he gave me a couple tips, which I'll share with you. He said, if he was, he covered Nicaragua when the Sandinistas overthrew the dictator. He was in and out of there. He wasn't there at the time when the dictator fell. But one of the things that brought down that dictator, whose name won't come to me, is that a journalist had run into the Nicaraguan army, and the army wasn't happy with him because he was in a war zone, and they were very unhappy that he was there. So they put him on the ground, as they say, prone out, and he's lying there, and they're questioning him. And for that dictator, that was the last stupid thing he did, because the journalist turned away, lying on the ground talking, was shot in the back of his head by the soldier. And it became a sensation, and people began to say, get rid of that guy, the dictator. So, and that was part of the downfall. But anyway, Cunningham said to me, you see what he did? He turned his head away. If somebody has a gun on you in a minute, don't turn your head away, because that's when they'll shoot you. He said the other thing to do is ask to talk to their commanding officer immediately. I want to talk to your commanding officer, because you're reminding him he has one, and he better think about what he's going to do. Anyway, those are just some of the things. And again, I'm going to say it all over again. Bill Cunningham was an honest-to-God war correspondent of the type that has passed away. They are in the museums now, because now you have to swear loyalty and wear a helmet to be a war correspondent. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT. We're going to take a break and come back to talk to Patrice Bonimutwa.
Mugojwa ni chimwana wanje Erega mawe sinakimenya Aho umuroro nkwera viri aha Mahoro yanje yagabanutse Sani nkari yaje kunshukashuka nk'umwana Ambwira kwangana n'umukunzi Wa wundi w'inshuti yanje Erega nyabusa buryo ufite abanzi
This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. And our guest, Patrice Bonimutwa, by the way, has published articles. There's a journal called Jambo News. I would urge you to go to Jambo News. And you, I haven't checked recent, but I suspect that they are writing about this matter. They have many good authors, and it's a matter of if you heard about the events of Rwanda, and they are something more than just a headline of of to remind everybody of the horrors of 1990 to 1994. If you need to know, you should want to know, go to sites like Jumbo News. This, again, it's the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Want to say a couple of things here further. Earlier I was talking about Bill Cunningham. I may as well finish another matter about Bill and his work. And a curious moment. Bill was once captured by elements of, in the Viet. They were called, I hate to use these terms, but people called the Viet Cong. The forces were, their question had arisen whether or not regular troops from North Vietnam had entered the conflict, I believe by way of Cambodia. And so brave journalists, ones who were saw themselves as people trying to get the facts, went to the near the front lines. And they, in the case of Bill, he was talking to an American commander, and he said, where are the VC, they were called. And the soldier answered, right at the end of that road, if down that road, and do not go down that road, but if you went down that road, that's where they are. Bill Cunningham and some other journalists went down the road, and they found themselves at a certain point. People stepped out of the forest and surrounded them, pointing weapons at them, and began to talk about them. Fortunately, he had with him a translator, and they were what Walter in The Big Lebowski calls the little men in the black pajamas. And they seemed rather rough-looking, and they didn't seem very happy. And the translator said to Bill, they're talking about killing us. And so he practiced his usual thing. He said, he asked them, please, can I talk to your commander? Walked up to whoever looked most in charge. Meanwhile, they were not answering. The translator says, they're very serious. And then out stepped an officer or someone who looked like an officer. He was what we call squared away. He walked up. And they spoke to the translator. He said, who are you? What is this? You don't belong here. And Cunningham explained who they were. And after the conversation, they were allowed to go. And by the way, on the black pajamas side of the question, they were saying, these guys are spies. They're going to target our position. And we'll be killed ourselves. So they had a discussion, decided to release them. It's never been forgotten between him, me, and a bunch of other people that I was we were all having a discussion, and I said, well, I'm really glad, Bill, that you're back alive and safe because you're a good friend and a nice man. But I think the guy in the black pajamas had a point. And fortunately, everybody laughed. But I just want to share that. Incidentally, Errol Flynn had a son who was a journalist there. He was killed in a similar situation. But this is almost science fiction to tell you that those people who were journalists actually felt they were safe because they were honestly journalists. They didn't have any guilty conscience that they were getting information for their journal, but also going to pass it to people who were going to use it in a war. So I want to come back to that distinction, which, again, that's from the past. It's not going to be repeated. He was of a school of journalists, and Morley Safer is probably the best-known member of it. Morley Safer famously was involved in the photographing of U.S. Marines setting fire to a village with using cigarette lighters. And that was journalism. And no es permiso anymore. You don't do that. So we're on the downside, downslope from there. This is the Taylor Report. Last point, I see that we're being protected by CSIS. They're gossiping based on secret information about a politician named, an MP named Dong. My position is Mr. Dong needs to investigate CSIS. The elected person ought to be looking at the secret police. The secret police ought not to be looking at the elected person because it's cheating to use information that you don't know to provide the source for and to try to sandbag and destroy a politician. They call it this place of democracy. There's an individual, I call him Whispering Smith, has never been outed yet, who's been providing all this information to Hunt and Chase or Chase and Hunt or Catch at the Globe and Mail. That's who ought to be investigated because it's not his job to be talking to newspapers. Just turn in your reports and mind your own business. It's up to the elected people to make the decision. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT. I got to thank Pedro and Winston for the great work today. And we'll see you next week.